At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Take a Man podcast. Dan Pizzuta with us today. Logan Paulson, of course, there. Craig Hoffman here. And Dan, you wrote the FTN Almanac's Commanders chapter this season. So you watch a lot of film. I know you think about the Commanders all the time because you had a radio hit every Thursday during the season. So you spent plenty of time watching the Commanders last year to make sure that you came on our show and knew what you were talking about. What was the most interesting thing in like having the separation from the season and thinking about previewing their 2025? What's like the place that you started in that, and whether it wound up being the actual first thing you wrote about, but from a thought process standpoint, where did you start?
One of the things that was interesting was kind of what did and didn't work in the offense, because I think that is one thing that, I have nothing to do with the projection. So I kind of write off of them a little bit, and that kind of, does influence how the chapter goes. But this is an offense that I think a lot of people would kind of expect some regression from because of how good it was in some unsustainable things that we would say. Like this, the Commanders had the fourth best fourth down DVOA that we've ever tracked.
I'm honestly surprised it was that low because the percentage was so high. I was like, it's fourth. Who the hell was first, second, and third?
Yeah. Well, so of the teams that, were high, the Commanders had 25. The team that is in first place was the 2012 Seahawks. They only went for it 17 times. 2012 Buffalo went for it 8 times. So like we are in very different, time for this to be high volume and also high efficiency. But again, it kind of goes back to, some of the other things. They were kind of optimized for, these fourth downs that they were able to convert. But because of that, I do still think there were some things on, first and second down that we will see improve a little bit. So I do think there is a lot for this offense that there's development that I think is going to potentially come with some of the passing and some of the openings and in structure that is going to help in first and second down, where they're probably not going to get to as many third and fourth downs. That is going to, I think, at least counterbalance some of the regression that we'll probably see. This probably is not going to be a historically good fourth down unit again, but I don't think they'll have to rely on that quite as often. So, finding the balance there was something that I kind of dug into for the first part of this chapter.
So what did you settle on is like the, I don't want you to give away your chapter because people should go read it, but like, what were the things that you kind of said like that are going to make them more efficient on first and second down? Like, what are the variables? Are you looking at play calling? Are you looking at personnel? And like, and how do you apply those different things to kind of get to the assumption that, hey, we're not going to need as many third downs or fourth downs as we were last year?
Yeah, it was a little bit of all of that. And I still think, early downs, the straight drop back passing game wasn't, the greatest. I still think there are, ways that Jaden Daniels could potentially, develop in processing a little bit. I think, scrambling was such a big part of his game, which again, like we talked about earlier, is great. Again, he had one of the best scrambling seasons we've ever tracked by a lot of, DYAR and DVOA. So I don't think that's going to be as reliable, but those were 7 yard gains or 12 yard gains. Those are great. But I think if you can come with some of the, explosive passing plays, I think that is going to help. One thing that I did come into, I won't go into the full numbers, but when writing the chapter, I was more I came away more optimistic about what Deebo Samuel can do as the, you know, second receiver than I was initially when this trade happened. Because I think we kind of look at Deebo Samuel's, 2024 season as a down season. I think what gets overlooked a lot is he had pneumonia in the middle of the season that he did not recover from. And his pneumonia kind of happened at the same time that Brandon Ayuk got hurt. So before both of those things happened, he was having a pretty good start to the season where he was able to, you know, win against zone coverage like we kind of expected him to be. The yards after the catch were still there. Then kind of when things really shifted for the 49ers, that's when things got worse. So I, as he is now going to be in that, you know, number two role, I think going to be schemed up well with a lot of the screens and things, which I think was already good last year. I am now more optimistic that there is a better second option in this passing game than there was last year, which I think is going to help, you know, some of the early down efficiency also.
When you look at how important Terry is, like, that's the big discussion here right now because of the contract. And I was talking about this on the radio show the other day, and I was like, well, let me pull up the EPA numbers. And I forgot, was surprised to possibly learn for the first time. The only receiver that had a better EPA per play, better total EPA in the entire NFL last year was Amon-Ra St. Brown. Also, Amon-Ra St. Brown's EPA last year was something like a Wayne Gretzky record. It is so far away better than everyone else. He was in the 90s. Terry's was second at like 68 total EPA, which is just preposterous. But clearly, like, Terry himself matters a lot. What did you find on the McLaurin front, and how does that make you think about what both his representation and Adam Peters is thinking about right now, which is what his new contract should look like?
Yeah, I mean, they should pay him like yesterday. I don't really know what they're waiting for. Yeah.
Unless his reps are asking for something actually insane.
Yeah.
Which might be happening.
You know, maybe like the receiver market has definitely exploded more relative to other, other positional the markets they have. So there probably is some a little bit, but for him to really be the only like true deep threat also was, I think, you know, something that probably took some of his value down a little bit because there wasn't the same amount of, you know, short intermediate targets that we see from some other, you know, number one type receivers. So for him to be acting kind of as the catch all for some of these put a lot on his plate. And I think he was, you know, so good. And the way he was able to kind of move around a little bit later in the year, we kind of talked about that during the season, how every week it kind of seemed like there was a new layer coming out to this offense. And by the end of the year, it was, you know, McLaurin wasn't just lining up outside to the left, like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins was when Cliff was in Arizona. So I think, you know, just having him on the field be that dominant, it absolutely is something that matters for Washington.
Interesting. I have kind of a big picture question that it bothered me for weeks, months, maybe. I was talking to Craig about it earlier, like this offseason. And like, the thing is, like, you alluded to it a little bit, like they seem like a team that operated in the tail of the bell curve, right? Like they were extreme in terms of explosive plays. Like they're like number four in terms of, you know, plays, explosive plays over 50 yards, but they're also 24th in terms of like your normal conventional explosive plays, right? Their fourth down percentage, Jane Daniels completion percentage, their third down percentage. Do you think that kind of getting this offense like to the mean, like they've done enough to kind of get back to like a playoff caliber team? Cause like I saw something in Vegas has them as like 8-8 or 8 and whatever they are, right? I don't even know if that's enough wins, but whatever the new thing
is,
right?
I think they're like 8.5 or something like that. Yeah. So like a 9-8 type of team or an 8-9 type of team.
And so have they done enough to get back to being in the playoffs, given the fact that they operated so much in the tail last year? It feels weird. It feels like they need to get better at being normal, if that makes sense. And can they do it?
No, that definitely makes sense. And I think that is, you know, the right way to put it. I will say, because I was on with Adam Chotz earlier, and he said it, so I'll say here, we do have Washington as the favorite in the NFC East.
Wow, look at you. Yes. You're on the right podcast,
So like I wrote the Eagles chapter also. So what, you know, part of that is there's a lot of turnover for the Eagles on defense, right? So as much as we do expect them to be, we have the Eagles as one of the most like well-rounded teams in the league. They're like top 10 in DVOA for projected in all three phases, but they're, you know, eighth, seventh, you know, they're borderline top 10. So for the Eagles, we're not expecting them to once again like be the number one defense in the league, and they also have one of the hardest schedules. And I think that, you know, just is just enough. So for Washington, we do project this offense to still be good. And like you said, I think there are things, you know, from the schematics that I think just from, you know, Jaden Daniels' ability to be, you know, a year two guy, have another year under his belt. I just personally am optimistic from the progression that we saw from that offense throughout the year. If it was just a static offense throughout the year and they were just really relying on, you know, Jaden Daniels bailing them out sometimes, which they did, I would be a little more pessimistic, but I do think there is a kind of a linear progression of things they were continually adding to the offense to make it better. But with the offensive line, I think that is certainly, you know, they really made an effort to do that. And I think that is certainly something where I think they could have easily stood pat and be like, we were able to get around this last year. I think we can still do this. So, you know, they did put a lot into it. Now, I'm not sure how much of an upgrade it is, but the fact that they did look at some of those pieces and thought at least, you know, we're going to raise the floor here and then hopefully still be able to coach around it. I do think that is, you know, what's going to help. And so are the projections also are really big on the defense just going to average, which would be a significant improvement from last year, which I think that might be a very optimistic you know, projection too. But if, you know, some things do work, the interior pressure helps. I think the secondary right now, I do think has a higher floor than it did last year, where you just kind of couldn't cover anybody. You know, Marshawn Lattimore doesn't have to be, you know, the best cornerback by DVOA, which he was like in his early half of the season with New Orleans last year. But I think just kind of having pieces that fit together where there's not a very significant weak link, you know, outside of edge rusher. But I do think they can scheme around that a little bit with some of the more fun things they can do for Frankie Louvu. If you're not in so many third and longs last year, you know, when they were in third and long, they did a lot of fun, creative things like going back to the film. There was a lot of very fun, you know, Frankie Louvu blitzes, but they weren't good on third and long at all because somebody was always open. So, you know, some of those, you know, cool pressures that we would kind of look at and be able to, so for some other teams that would, you know, really matter and get to the quarterback was just able to get the ball out because the coverage wasn't there. So if this defense can be somewhere around average, we do expect this offense to counteract some of the, you know, unsustainable things with some natural development. And yeah, we do have them as the slight favorite to win the division.
I can't wait for Eagles fans to get mad. I'm so excited. So when you talk about the defense, it's funny because I think the philosophy is kind of the same. It's like, we need to be way better on first and second down and like be way more normal. And if we can not be really bad against the run, like the edge rusher stuff, the coverage stuff, like it won't matter as much. And we hopefully made that a little bit better. Obviously the Fowler missing piece is big considering the production that he had from a sack standpoint. But Logan and I have talked about this a lot, and I don't want to like lead the witness too much, so to speak, but like, where does the solidity of the projections come from, and how much do you buy into the fact that this defense can be at least average in 2025-26?
Yeah, I think it does kind of stem from not being like a league worst run defense. And, you know, having some more of that interior, you know, bulked up, which I think should help. You know, so if you're not getting gashed up the middle in the way they were, you do have, you know, a second and long now might be a thing that you get to, which they weren't really right getting to all that often. So that helps in some third downs too. So I think, you know, being more sound against the run certainly helps. I do think we like their corner additions. I do think a healthy Marshawn Lattimore is going to help. I like Trey almost a lot. Yeah, I think being able to move Sandersill into the slot is definitely going to, I think that is, you know, in addition by just kind of moving some pieces around, having him play his more natural position. So I just do think there is a lot there where I think we just don't expect them to be so bad at a lot of things, which I do think just kind of, you know, incrementally does make them better at some of the other things we should expect them to be good at.
Sounds good to me. Let's be good on first and second down. Logan, that's going to be the theme of the season on this podcast. Like, go Commanders, be good on first and second down. Everything else will work out.
On both sides of the ball. Yeah.
On both sides of the ball. Some decent running, some very good run stopping, and maybe yeah. It'll be less of an adventure. Because, man, winning by on the last play, that's super fun. Last drive, that's super fun when you do it all the time. It's just the doing it all the time part that seems kind of hard. Dan Pizzuta, you can read the FTN Almanac. Dan, do you have you guys have a drop date for that?
Monday. Coming out Monday.
Logan, you have the rest of with July us. Planned. You get to read the FTN Almanac.
You get to read the Almanac.
There's a lot of info in there. So you can check out the Commander stuff that DP wrote, as well as apparently Eagles. How many other chapters did you do? You do the whole NFC East?
No. So I did three NFC East teams. And so I did Commanders, Eagles, Cowboys, and the Ravens.
Nice. That's a fun group of teams. How do you try to put a statistical barometer or wrapping around George Pickens?
I think that the thing with Pickens is it does open up Dallas in a way that we kind of haven't seen, right? I think one of the things that Dallas really lacked was kind of juice on the outside,
yeah.
Probably like since Amari Cooper or Brandon Cook. So when you do have someone like Dak, who is already a quarterback, is going to throw some tight windows.
Yeah.
If you have an offense that is now so condensed because there is no vertical juice, that is kind of what you have the first half of the 2024 season when that offense just wasn't looking good. You know, their head coach now is the offensive coordinator who is overseeing that. So there's, you know, some give and take there.
Yeah.
But I do think it is overall probably, you know, Pickens is going to be a plus addition. I think it is a skill set that they did need. You know,
do you have a crash out, analytics metric
what?
For like
George
crash
Pickens,
out
what
rate
happens
or
when
what?
The juice is spiked?
Yeah, what happens? You know what I'm saying? That's what Craig's worried about. Craig's worried about, like, you know, 100% crash out rating.
I mean, yeah, that's the statistical, like, put that in AI. How often is George Pickens crashed out? Always.
So that's kind of one of the things I enjoy the most out of the Almanac is because, like, we don't have numbers for that, but we do have really good writing that is going to like kind of walk through that. So yeah. That's one of the fun things of the chapter. That's kind of one of the things I enjoy doing is, you know, we do get the numbers that does shape kind of how we're feeling about these chapters. But then we go into a lot of detail, try to add a lot of context to why these numbers are saying what they do. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is, I think, the best way you can, you know, get ready for a season league-wide.
Shots, get on a crash out stat. Come on, you invented DVOA. We need a George Pickens crash out rating. Dan Pizzuta, everybody. We'll be back on Monday with another mailbag. We do have some room for a couple of questions, so if you want to hit us, HoffmanShow.com is the easiest place, or on Instagram at Hoffman.sports or Logan_Paulson82. DP, anywhere else we want to send folks for where they can find things that you're doing at the moment?
Check out the Almanac. That's kind of what I've been doing for the past like 2 months. It's a lot of work that goes into there. You know, the Blue Sky, mostly just Dan Pizzuta, pretty much anywhere. It's a fairly unique name. So, I got full poncho over that everywhere.
I saw a great meme the other day that was like, you talk to Gen Z kids and it's like, oh, what's your Gmail? It's like my name. And it's like, wow, you're so old. It's like, yeah, I was there when the thing was invented. Anyway, Dan Pizzuta, everybody, with us here on Taking.